Chapter 73. Driven and Bled.
"We've got half a day, Lord Kildan, and then we'll be in their power," Maywin reported after dismounting her lathered horse. "It seems they've no interest in Ethan's party heading toward Echo Hold. They come for us alone, and we must press on."
The late afternoon sun hung over the plain where they had thought to encamp for the night, the heat sucking sweat from their skin, while the warm light painted their faces the colour of flame. After Ethan's party had departed, Lord Kildan had ordered a more leisurely pace south to rest the horses, but Maywin smelled something on the breeze blown in from the east and returned with the poor news. An army of Mikix creatures of unknown number moved across the plain, coming directly for them.
"We can't rest," Maywin said. "We ride south as fast as we can to the Blackwood, even if it kills the horses. The forest is dense and dark, and will give us some advantage. If we're caught out here on the plain, and if that army is the size I think it is, we will be slaughtered. If we ride through the night, we'll make the Blackwood by dawn, and have several hours to rest before they fall upon us."
Lord Kildan swallowed hard at the news. His son Gerund stood next to him, every inch the soldier his father was.
"Father, let me take a group of 100 of our heaviest cavalry and ride along the eastern flank some distance from the main party, so we can sound the alarm if some group of the host catches us early."
"Do it,"
Kildan agreed.
"I'll send for Leal with you," Maywin added. "He can see and sense things you cannot."
Lord Kildan nodded.
"Dazan, Kimdan, and Tolbrook will stay with the Shalane at all times and ride on the extreme western flank. If we are attacked, we will slow the advance to buy time for the Shalane to escape."
"I will ride with her as well," Ethrys offered, concern in his eyes.
The Shalane could hardly speak. Something was happening to her, both in body and spirit. It felt like the undoing of everything that she was. In the hour after her mother left, her skin began to darken and dry, as if held over some invisible, scorching flame that desiccated her flesh but didn't burn. It worsened with every hour of the sweltering afternoon, until chips of greying skin flecked away and fell like ash to the ground. She wore her riding gloves to hide it, but it hadn't escaped Ethrys's notice. But worse was a mounting despair flooding down a channel already worn away by her grief over Jen's death and her mother's departure. The events of the last 2 years had sent her soaring to the greatest heights of emotion and dashed her just as far down. But she realized now that even in dark times, some anchor of hope had kept her grounded. Some purpose had pushed her forward against the driving wind of resistance that always seemed to blow in her face. The anchor was gone, and a deadness just as heavy now replaced it. The sunshine around her mocked the storm that swirled in her mind. It reminded her of the demon's poison that had pulled Jen so far into despair that it had nearly killed him. Who would come into her mind and pull her out?
"We ride!" Lord Kildan shouted, jolting the Shalane out of her mind and into the dangerous world outside.
Lord Kildan's men took up the refrain and mounted their horses, though even the general clamour couldn't mask the groans of weary men, unready to be forced back into movement. Gerund, Volney at his side, split off and rode east with the cavalry until they were barely visible in the distance.
"Let me help you mount," Dazan said sweetly, offering his hand.
She took it and then snatched it away self-consciously, feigning rearranging her improvised headdress and veil before taking the saddle and pulling herself up. Dazan sidled up to her horse, making a show of adjusting the stirrup straps. His dark hair had grown wilder in the days of marching and battle, and his once crisp uniform was rumpled and dirty. A strange glow of expectancy still filled his eyes, despite their harrowing circumstances.
"Milady, I know you have wandered through many sorrows. You have lost your husband and Jen, whom I know you esteemed as a great man of arms. I stand ready as your ever constant friend to succour you in these woes." He lowered his voice. "And with the obstacles now removed, I might hope that the warm regard we have always shared might bloom into something more blessed than just friendship."
The agony and deadness within her spared her from feeling the full horror of Dayson's unlooked-for and unwelcome invitation. Her mind refused to even accept it as real, the social machinery meant to respond to such a forward declaration jammed and stuck fast in a mire. esteemed Jen as a great man of arms? How could Dacen be so ignorant of her feelings? She blinked to clear her head, and then spurred the horse onward to join nearly 2,000 men racing forward in a desperate attempt to reach the forest before an army of dark creatures overtook them. The interminable night favoured them with a clear sky, the full light of the three moons beaming down to ease their way through a light mist that clung to the grass like a gauzy veil. Horses and men fell during the night, exhausted and drained. The others rode on without them. Lord Kildan and General Harband refused to let up. The indomitable Maywen rode back and forth between the main body and Cheren's defensive column on their eastern flank. The Shalane never heard the reports she brought back, but by the army's unrelenting pace, the news spurred them forward, rather than invited rest. Several times during the solemn hours of the night, threading through the wisps of mist, the Shalane nearly fell out of her saddle from a leeching exhaustion. Everyone needed sleep, but few carried a heavier burden than hers. More men and horses succumbed to the forced march, the wrenching cry of screaming horses and deserted men driving everyone's sanity to the breaking point. Even the Shalane's leaden heart jumped to her throat when the first, barely perceptible thumping of the Uyumark assaulted her ears, only to be followed by the frantic yells of Jeren's men. A battle ensued, dimly heard by those in the main column, the noises of weapons and the tone of Jeren's barked commands hinting at the ebb and flow of the fight. The altercation was brief, and the tenor of the night air returned to the slow rumble of horses riding ever south. Maywen came back from the fight, and Ethrys rode forward to listen to the report she gave to Kildan and Harband, returning to the Shalane a short while later.
"Jeren's men skirmished with the hunters scouting ahead," Ethrys told her. "Time is short. We are nearly to the wood and have 3 hours at best to prepare for the main body."
"How is your skin?" The Shalane regarded him dully. "Does it matter?"
Ethrys frowned, but three horses approaching drew their attention away. Volney slumped in the saddle, riding between two of his fellow soldiers. A dark arrow protruded from his shoulder, and the other two bore deep gashes on their legs. The Shalane cringed, knowing what they would ask.
"We need healing," Volney said, wincing. "Damn archer hit me out of the dark."
They stopped the horses as the column proceeded forward around them. Hesitantly, the Shalane removed a hand from her riding glove, surprised at the amount of flaked, ash-like skin that fell from it. Her skin appeared fully burned and black now, and Volney, even in his discomfort, drew in a startled breath.
"Mekik's beard,"
one of the soldiers exclaimed, earning him a stern look from Ethrys. The Shalane reached forward, hand seeming like a dark claw, and grasped Volney's arm, more skin falling away at the friction. She closed her eyes and tried, as she had 100 times before, to sense the wound and heal it, but the power had fled. No amount of concentration or effort produced even the slightest healing effect. Tears came unbidden to her eyes. Even her gift had been stripped from her. She was truly worthless now.
"I can't," she said, pulling away.
"I have some skill there," Ethrys said. "Dacen, Kimdan, keep her moving."
The Shalane barely recognized the passing of night, wondering what sort of dark transformation was upon her. Was this punishment? Was this retribution for failing to protect the holy baby? For loving Jen instead of the monster she had been married to? Wasn't her regret and the world's undoing enough punishment? Wasn't watching Jen hammered to the earth by a wicked bolt enough torment?
"We're there,"
Dacen trumpeted loudly, again bringing her from her dark reverie. The eastern horizon bore the barest hints of dawn, washing away the easternmost array of stars. Before them loomed the black forest they had driven for. While perhaps a trick of the darkness, black was an apt description. Rather than large, thick trees, the black forest consisted of many thin pine trees crammed together in tight spaces. The needles and branches grew only near the top, the thin trunks shooting impressively high into the air. Fallen, dead trees lay at angles, interrupting the uniformity of the dense vertical poles. The bark of the trees was dark like her skin, and its layers peeled away from the trunks in feathery strands. As they neared, it became clear that riding horses through the tight spaces of the black wood would be impossible. Their original route would have led them further east, around the wood, and then back west toward Rugoth. Heading directly west would trap them against an impassable ravine and put them in an indefensible position. Almost as soon as they arrived, Dacen and Kimdan helped her from her horse and led her into murky, sylvan darkness and away from prying eyes. Lord Kildan and General Harband formed their troops into ranks, Gerund and his men returning from the east to join the rest of the party. The orders were given for alternating shifts of sleep and work, and Gerund and a handful of his men were sent back into the plain to see if they could recover any of the recently fallen soldiers before the Uyumark butchered them and stuffed them into cook pots. The Shalane sat heavily against a tree trunk, a knot burrowing into her shoulder. She was too tired to care. Dacen told Kimdan to get some rest. A trio of soldiers lay Cadean's slumbering body behind a thick tangle of fallen trees not far from where she reclined, and the Shalane wondered how long they could do without his sword. Even if awakened, she thought he might just try cutting through the entire Uyumark column to get back to Mirel. The woods burst into activity as men hauled brush to the forest edge to create a dense wall that would slow the Uyumark advance. For the few who had been wounded in their flight, a small camp was set up near where Cadean was laid. Nearly half of the soldiers simply lay down in the forest and immediately fell into an exhausted sleep, so profound a casual observer might have thought them dead. The Shalane joined them shortly after, the scent of Jen's Isle Stone rising with the heat of her body. Ethrys woke her some time later, Maywen with him, and gave her a hunk of bread and apple slices.
"We have a bit of good fortune. It appears the Uyumark are as weary and hungry as we are. We've only seen a handful of hunters. The rest appear to have stopped to light their cook pots."
"Give the food to someone who will fight," the Shalane said glumly. "I need little to get me through sitting on the ground."
"You will eat, child,"
Ethrys said firmly, penetrating eyes boring through the veil.
"Either take it, or I will use my magic to force you."
The Shalane took the proffered meal and nibbled at it. If they wanted to waste the food, she supposed she couldn't stop them. Ethrys relaxed as she ate, Maywen looking around and listening.
"I wanted Maywen to see what is happening to your skin," Ethrys said. "I will try to help it, but I have never seen anything like it before, and wondered if she might have come across it in her travels."
Placing the food in her lap, the Shalane removed her riding glove, and Dacen sucked breath through his teeth at the ghastly sight. The Shalane was surprised herself to see just how blackened and flaking it had become. It truly appeared as if she had fallen asleep with her hand in the fire. When she clenched her fingers, chips would drift away to the ground. Maywen, face barely masking her horror at the sight, stooped down and took her hand, rolling up the sleeve a little.
"So it covers your body?"
"Yes," the Shalane confirmed. "It is uncomfortable. It started coming on after my mother left me."
"I have never seen any poison or sickness that acts as this does,"
Maywen said, releasing the Shalane's hand and standing again.
"In the Mekikian Wars, there were many afflictions, and I do not know them all. But no, Ethrys, I can be of no assistance here."
"It's a curse for my failure," the Shalane mumbled.
"What failure, Shalane?"
Ethrys censured.
"You have nothing to be ashamed of. You did everything that was required of you and more. What happened at Echo Hold was none of your doing. Your mother told you this. If Jen had the chance, I'm sure that he would have said the same thing. You are not cursed."
"I failed to love my husband. I failed to protect the babe. My baby,"
she cried at the memory of his perfect form, and the short time she had to embrace and suckle him.
"No one loved your husband, and Shatan and Aethon failed to protect the baby," Ethrys reasoned forcefully, trying to break through her guilt. "You were not supposed to have the magic to fight Mikik. Shatan was. Mikik tricked everyone, and that is not your doing."
"But if I hadn't loved another man, maybe I would have tried harder with Shatan," she said,
noticing Dacen look away as if embarrassed. In horror, she realized he thought that he was the other man.
"Shalane," Ethrys said, taking both of her hands, "give it time. You will see that none of what has happened can be laid to your charge. You are as guiltless as Maywen or me, or your mother. Now hush, child. Let me see if something can be done for your condition."
Ethrys began chanting, and the Shalane closed her eyes. For a brief moment she felt relief from the dry, raspy itch of her skin, but once Ethris's chanting stopped, it returned. She remembered Jen's sickness in Elder Lurimora that would only abate when she touched him. He had been Mikkik's creature that couldn't abide the holy city. "Perhaps I am so unworthy that I am unfit for even a place as this," she thought, misery compounding. Ethris shook his head and stood.
"It is beyond my knowledge," he lamented. "I am sorry, Shalane.
Maywan, when the fighting starts, I would like you to stay with her. If it looks as if the battle is turning against us, take her into the woods and try to get her to Mikmir and the protections of the castle. If I can follow, I will." They left, Dacen remaining nearby. "I'm sure it will fade soon," he consoled. "You have always been a creature of such beauty that it will return to you naturally, I'm sure of it. Your radiance will shine again, and everything will be as it was at first." The Shalane declined to answer, and Kimdan arrived a short while later to let Dacen rest. Kimdan made himself useful by constructing a crude shelter for her to afford her some privacy and some protection from any inclement weather. And the day had come as hot and bright as the one before it.
"The Uyumark will wait to come until it cools and begins to darken," Kimdan said. "If you can rest, you should. We may need to flee in the night."
She nodded and leaned her head against the tree. She didn't want to flee. She just wanted to lay down. And if she never rose again, then all the better.
"Hunters!"
The urgent scream brought the Shalane out of a dead sleep, and she dashed her head against the side of Kimdan's lean-to, shaking the entire structure. In the weak light of dusk, she could almost imagine that the form standing in the black uniform of a dark guard was Jen. But it was Kimdan, youthful bravado tempered by training and now war. He squinted toward the edge of the forest and out into the plain, eyes searching for the camouflaged beasts gathered in the tall grass. The Uyumark thumping echoed among the tree trunks, filling her with dread and chasing the grogginess from her mind. The Shalane, whose crude accommodations faced backward into the woods, craned around to get a better look, her tight, dry skin cracking and peeling with the effort. From her position behind the front line, the trunks obscured nearly everything save the barest of slits of light that provided narrow windows to the battlefield beyond. Her veil and the constricted view prevented her from seeing anything save the fleeing passage of men darting to their positions. Crunching footsteps nearby brought her heart to her throat, but it was only Dacen arriving from wherever he had taken his rest.
"We've come to it now," Dacen said gravely to Kimdan. "At least they let us rest. How do you fare, your highness?"
"Awful. Horrible. Fine."
"I see Kimdan made you a little castle. I had thought to do the same myself. We should fortify it if we get the chance."
"Get down!"
came another yell from the front, and the woods exploded with a whistling of dark arrows ripping through the trees to hammer hard into the trunks or skitter into the underbrush. Kimdan pushed her father behind the tree as he and Dacen crouched.
"It is a typical tactic," Kimdan explained. "They rain down arrows to keep our archers from doing any damage while they send in the bashers to knock down our fortifications. It should let up in a minute."
The Shalane huddled on the ground, covering her ears to mute the awful racket, punctuated by the painful wails of those felled by the mighty bows of the Uyumark archers. Few arrows fell as far back in the woods as she was, but the loud pop of a sleek, dark arrow nearby snapped her eyes open, the polished shaft quivering in the trunk of a tree. As Kimdan predicted, the hail of arrows stopped, providing for a brief respite until the relative silence ended with the horrifying crash of the bashers smashing into their hastily constructed fortifications. Orders and shouts and screams mixed with the sharp sound of branches being snapped and split and chopped. Kimdan and Dacen waited, swords at the ready, itching to help those who fought in the dwindling light before them. The voices of General Harband and Lord Kildan rang out clearly above the din, first calling for reinforcements toward the middle, and then frantically warning everyone to watch the flank.
"If they spread us out, we're done for," Kimdan said soberly.
A soldier sprinting back toward their position startled them.
"They're breaking through!"
he yelled, eyes filled with terror, as he bolted toward the interior of the forest. Kimdan tripped him, sending the panicked Rugothian soldier and his weapon flying. Angrily, Kimdan hauled him up by his breastplate and slammed him into a tree.
"Get back to the line, you—"
Two bashers charged into camp from their left flank, both carrying massive warhammers and wearing thick hide armour and metal helmets. Kimdan released the soldier, who continued his flight into the twilight of the branches beyond. Wordlessly, the bashers struck, and while their short stature brought them only chest high with their human enemies, their thick limbs struck with fierce power. The first drove its hammer in a side stroke toward Dayson's hip. Dayson jumped backward and away, the strike breaking a thin tree trunk to his right in two. Dayson returned with a downward strike to its helmet, the impact hard, but the blade did little damage as it skipped off the metal. Kimdan took a risk as the other charged him, and he leapt at it before it could throw its arm over to strike. The sword's arcing trajectory aimed for a small space between the helmet and shoulder, and missed, impacting with the dense armour of the shoulder and doing nothing. Desperately, Kimdan tried to pull back, but the basher wound up its unfinished hammer stroke and brought it down on Kimdan's extended leg, cracking it with a sound so awful that the Shalane shrieked. Dayson could do nothing to help his comrade as the other basher pushed him backward. Dayson tried quick stabs, seeking to insert his blade in some gap that would damage the creature. Kimdan, eyes pained, tried to roll out of the way of another strike, but the basher pounded him again, shattering his sword arm. The flight of Regent Ogbith's son finally penetrated the Shalane's fear and self-pity, giving her the metal she needed to act. She spied the sword discarded by the fleeing soldier and dove for it, Samian's hours of knightly instruction making the hilt and the blade familiar to her hand, though she had never wielded a sword in the waking world. The basher hammered down on Kimdan again, crushing the left side of his chest, ribs snapping. The Shalane stood and, with a skill not quite her own, aimed a sword stroke at the same spot Kimdan had tried for before. Unaware of her, the basher made no move as the sword edge drove into its neck, blood spurting onto her dress as she retreated a step in preparation for its retaliation. It reeled and turned, horrible line of grey eyes fixing on her from the depths of its helmet. The Shalane brought her sword up instinctively. Dayson still hadn't finished his opponent, and three more bashers that had broken through the front line now marched toward their position. The wounded basher charged unsteadily, its hammer swinging wide. The Shalane struck quickly, chopping into the neck from the opposite side and severing the head. The basher fell hard at her feet. At that moment, an arrow took Dayson's opponent down, and with a yell, Gerund, Volney, Maywan, and two Tolnorian soldiers broke into the fray and dispatched the remaining bashers quickly. Blood covered everyone.
"Volney and I will stay with the Shalane now," Gerund said, eyes hard. "You four return to patrolling the flank."
"I'll stay too," Maywan said. "We may need to flee into the wood if the tide doesn't turn soon."
The Shalane ran to Kimdan. Gerund, noticing his swordmate, joined her. Kimdan barely breathed, eyes vacant and blood running from his mouth and nose. With every ounce of will and desire she had, she tried to heal him. But as with Volney, nothing would come. Her gift had truly gone. In despair, she watched as Kimdan exhaled for the last time, face slackening. Shaking, she stood and went into the lean-to he had built for her. The sudden energy that had come upon her was gone, and she curled up on the ground and wept for the blood spilled for one as useless as she. The sun dropped fully as her protectors formed a solid perimeter around her, the darkness becoming ever more impenetrable. A change in the thumping brought them all on alert, but gradually the sounds of fighting ceased, replaced with the moans and cries of the injured and dying.
"I'm going to scout to make sure they haven't secreted any force inside the wood that could come upon us," Maywan said. "How can you see anything?" Dayson asked. "Elven eyes aren't defeated by the dark, and the Uyumak aren't as blind as you are either. Stay close to the Shalane, and start no fire. If I cannot return, find Falael and do as he says."
"We need to bury Kimdan," Volney said sadly. "He deserves a better resting place than this cursed wood."
"We need sharp swords and eyes right now," Gerund returned. "Let's pull him back a space and arrange his body with what dignity we can. Dayson, stay with the Shalane."
"As you wish, little brother," Dayson said with a firm tone of dominance. Once Gerund had left, he turned to the Shalane.
"I think someone is getting a little carried away with showing off for my father. I think he's always resented that I am the elder son. Curse this miserable darkness. At least the Uyumak can have cook fires."
The Shalane, tears falling silently, now said nothing. The movement around the forest was slow. Men flung curses into the night at scrapes and trips that could hardly be avoided. But stumbling about was better than light that would provide targets for the Uyumak archers. The moons again shone brightly on the plain, though stray clouds would drift overhead and shroud patches of the ocean of grass. The Shalane drifted in and out of consciousness, for how long she didn't know. But when she woke, everything was unnaturally still.
"What is it?"
she asked weakly.
"The drums have stopped, m'lady," Geron said. "The Uyumak have gone completely silent. I can't imagine what this portends. Be at the ready. We may have to move."
"Fall back! Run!"
came the cry from the front line. As dissolute as she was, fear struck her heart as she realized that Ethris had raised the call. The Shalane bolted upright as a curtain of fire rose on the plain, the light sending shadows wavering through the forest. At first she thought the flames some trickery of the Uyumak or their chuckers, but Maywan arrived seconds later to correct her assumption.
"Ethris buys us time," she said frantically.
"Keep the sun to your left in the morning," she yelled to everyone. "We meet at the ridge." They pushed southward toward the unknown chambers of the forest, Dayson gripping her arm painfully as he vainly tried to guide her around obstacles he himself couldn't see well enough to avoid. Once the bowls had swallowed the light of Ethris's fire, going forward became a matter of blind feeling about in the darkness. All around, the voices and footfalls of panicked men created the strange sensation of everyone being together in a dark room, where the only comfort was knowing someone else shared the same affliction of blindness. Branches and undergrowth continually clawed at their feet and clothing like restless corpses trying to pull them down into an inky grave. They had hardly gone 200 feet into the sylvan abyss when a new sound, creeping up from behind them, stopped every foot and turned every head. Something moved along the forest floor, scrabbling and scraping among the dried needles and branches, coming for them like a wave in a steady, crescendoing roar.
"Lanterns!"
someone yelled, the cry echoing through the forest. None of her protectors possessed one, but after a few moments several pockets of light bloomed around them in the gloom. The uneven retreat had scattered the soldiers haphazardly around them, and the Shalane shuddered to think of what had already become of those too wounded to flee. Relentlessly, the sound grew, men drawing their weapons to face the unknown threat. This was no Uyumak horde, the persistent thumping of their language unheard among the approaching cacophony, but when their enemy did arrive among the forward ranks, oaths and screams punctuated the night. The Shalane, despite her weariness of soul and body, could not stifle the scream ripped from her by the revelation of the horror that came for them. Along the forest floor, a horde of black, lustrous beetles, the size of a man's fist, scrambled in an anxious advance toward them, the lamplight casting a fiery reflection along their obsidian backs, giving them the appearance of a flowing river of fire. A single, snaking tubule hung between wicked pincers, adding to the uncomfortable appearance of their pointy, jointed legs and ridged backs. Such was the speed of the insect host that none thought to flee. Swords, boots, hammers and shields all pounded down with fury on the mass of carapaces, the crunch of popping insects and the explosion of pus and slime bursting all around them. To the Shalane's amazement, the creatures avoided her, circling around her instinctively as if she were a warding pillar they could not abide. But her protectors and every other soldier caught in the unyielding wave eventually succumbed to the beetles, the creature's pincers lancing through boot leather, puncturing legs. The insect's tubules wiggled into the pincer cuts, sucking blood. The Shalane huddled against a tree trunk, powerless as the beetles took their fill of the soldier's blood, and then just as quickly as they had come, turned and scrabbled away back to the north. Blood dribbled from the beetle wounds, the wounded staunching the blood with their hands. The pale soldiers around her slowly recovered enough to stand, and as tough and indomitable as the Dark Guard was trained to be, the Shalane could see in Geron's and Volney's eyes the flicker of fear that would plague lesser men in less dangerous circumstances. No more did screams and yells punctuate the forest, only the pitiful sounds of whimpering and crying from an army of men pushed beyond the reach of hope.
"We've got to move,"
Geron said, the first to rise, looking sickly and wan.
"Let's keep the lanterns lit until the Uyumak give us a reason not to."
Maywen found them moments later, a haggard Ethris at her side. A stunned, upset Cadean followed, eyes hollow, Falael bringing up the rear. Several bites gashed Maywen's legs, though her hard eyes betrayed no weakness. Ethris was untouched, though Cadean fared as poorly as everyone else. They examined the Shalane, looking for injuries.
"They didn't bother with me," she said to get their prying eyes off of her. "I can walk."
Maywen inspected the cuts on her legs.
"They bit me, but died immediately on doing so. The same for Falael. They didn't like the taste of elven blood."
"They liked mine just fine," Geraint fumed. "What was that?"
"One of Mikik's abominations," Ethris said sourly. "I could feel its mind challenging me just before it attacked. Awful, horrible thing. What it wants with our blood I cannot guess. We are in dire circumstances now."
Gradually the call to move echoed through the forest, and those with the strength to do so hauled themselves up and forward under the power of fear and will. Cadean joined her group of protectors, and the Shalane wondered what bargain Ethris had struck with the man after awakening him. Whatever it was, she knew he would bolt at the first opportunity to find Mirel, or die in the attempt. They marched through the night, and the Shalane could only guess what the toll in men would be between those that simply got lost amid the trackless forest and those who collapsed from exhaustion. From the glances between Ethris and Maywen, she could tell they noticed the same thing as she. The soldiers looked more exhausted and sweaty than they should have. Even their breathing seemed forced. Near morning, they encountered a pleasant glade blooming with wild flowers and bisected by a gurgling stream. There they ordered a halt, Lord Kildan and General Harband crossing to where Ethris, Maywen, and Falael talked in Elvish. Both leaders appeared as wan and unsteady as the men.
"The men, well, all of us are of a fever and weakening," Lord Kildan said. "We go no farther."
Maywen shook her head.
"We should at least get to the tree line on the other side so the archers can't butcher us on a whim. I know the men are weak, but it must be done. It's not far."
Lord Kildan collapsed to the ground insensate, twitching with fever. All over the glade, men dropped prone as if compelled to a sudden slumber they could not refuse. In minutes, the entire clearing appeared like a battlefield where the battle had long ended, and only the corpses were left behind. Only the fitful fever sleep revealed that something else was at work. The Shalane, Ethris, Falael, and Maywen still stood amid the stricken army to witness the sun cresting the tall pines, revealing a glorious morning. The beauty of the glade and the teeming life of insects flitting among the blossoms mocked the terror of the passing night and the moaning men scattered everywhere.
"Ethris," Maywen said, voice empty, "do you have anything to aid this?"
"I will try," he replied, "though I am close to spent. Is there any elven lore that might help, Falael?"
Falael shook his head.
"Not that,"
Maywen abruptly stood erect, eyes distant, her hand going to her chest, her lips parted slightly, as if she wanted to exclaim, but she snapped her mouth shut. While the Shalane couldn't be sure, it seemed some thought or hope had struck the half-elf.
I remember now," she finally said. "A woodsman I once knew who used to frequent these woods. He used to dwell in a place not far from here. He may have wisdom to aid us. Let me see if I can seek him out."
Ethris furrowed his brows.
"Would he know more than you?"
She nodded.
"In some things, yes. He is the only hope I can see for us now."